Now, my theory on that is routine is good 60% of the time, maybe 75% of the time. You know, we like to go eat at the same places. We like to go do the same things. There's something to that. But don't let it be maybe 100% of the time. So, you know, try something a little new. So Kelly, she went online and, you know, in New York and now in South Florida. You can subscribe to all this stuff, like free lectures that are going on at the local colleges or maybe some high school theater production that's going on. You know, we've been to see plays at the high school theater. I mean, it costs you 10 bucks, and the kids are up there, and sometimes they're just phenomenal, you know, just doing a great job. As part of that, I went to a thing. We went to a thing the other day, and then Kelly got me a Christmas gift for this. We went to Edgar Allan Poe little theater thing that the kids at the college drama department were doing. Now, something you should know about me is I do not like to be spooked. Like I don't go see scary movies. If the thing comes on, like in the movie theater, what's that called? The preview. Like I take my glasses off because I can't see anything, and I just wait, man. I just wait. I just think about happy thoughts. I quote 23rd Psalm. Then Kelly's like, "It's over," and I put the glasses back on. You know, I did not like to be spooked. When I first went in ministry, like the pastor I served with, he was a big X-Files guy. Remember X-Files? Shoot, I wouldn't watch that. I think it was too scary, man. And longer I've been in ministry, the less I need to be spooked. I mean, I get spooked enough just in ministry, you know. But so we went to see this Edgar Allan Poe thing. Kelly's like, "Oh, I couldn't believe you held my hand." I'm like, "I wouldn't hold your hand. I was scared to death." And as part of that, that beating heart, da-doop-da-doop, you know, rapping on my chamber door, nevermore, I said to that. So a little Edgar Allan Poe humor. And then, like, this was like last November. To top it off, Kelly went on to this used bookstore place that I like. Like last year, she got me the Sherlock Holmes collection, the Arthur Conan Doyle. And so we've been getting these newsletters from this first edition kind of place or whatever. So she bought me an Edgar Allan Poe book. Showed up in bed like that night, and it's like on my nightstand. I'm like, there's no way I'm reading that. You know? Like, I have enough problems sleeping. You know, Count of Monte Cristo, Sword of Damocles. I ain't reading that. So anyway, you can be creative is what I'm saying with that. And then Eric gives us this advice, and I think it's good. Romance. You know, romance. You don't have to wait until you're at home to kiss. Hold the hand of your spouse. Talk, embrace, enjoy each other. It's pretty good. He used to live down in Miami, and then he says here, he now lives in Nashville, and he gives you some spots in Miami you should go to, and he says, "But I'm not giving away my Nashville spots." So Kelly and I are going to Nashville next week. So if you're looking for me next Saturday night, I'll be at the Grand Ole Opry. That's where I'll be. But date night can be really important. Now, date night does not always have to end, begin, or include sex, but it's not a bad benefit. But just understand that it doesn't have to, and that's obviously something that you have to kind of let flow naturally. And yes, I am blushing just a bit. So I can talk on masturbation on Parents Weekend in New York City, but apparently I can't talk about sex with a group of pastors. So figure that out. Gary, do you want to come back up for some Q&A? Maybe pull it up here. All right, I think I'm good on date night. The only other thing, what's that? Did you have something? Were you going to say something?
I said I got a good story on that later.
Okay, great, great. Well, you have to pay for the cigars. Okay. The only other thing I was going to say about date night, of course, I mentioned the children and then the grandchildren. I'm sure you can structure that out yourself. That may not be a weekly thing, but and depending on where they live, it may be more difficult. The only thing I was going to say on this area is that there is a time to merge those two with rest and your spouse, and there is a time just to go away by yourself. There's a Latin word for that. My wife keeps trying to teach it to me. Does anybody know it's like a vacation where you leave the kids at home?
Heaven.
Heaven, yes, there it is, right there. Yes, so thank you, sir. I appreciate that. So we got this little thing going with the different acts. But, yeah, there is a word for leaving your kids at home and going on vacation. And you, if you're a grandparent, you can give that gift to your children, in spite of the fact that they probably don't deserve it, but you could give it to them anyway. And then, you know, it's good for you. It's good for your children, and it's good for you to get away from them from time to time. All right. We've covered four of these, right? I've said a word about staff accountability. Real quick, I talked about the nap thing on rest. Just another thought on the date night idea that has a universal application beyond just date night Back in the day with the top 10 young entrepreneur thing, when I traveled around and all that, Zig Ziglar was one of the speakers, so I learned a lot from Ziglar. And Ziglar was known to hit the airport as soon as we were done to try to get home, and his goal was to spend as many nights at home as he could, even though he traveled the country and was one of the top speakers in America at the time. Just passed away recently, by the way. In fact, I'll tell you the story real quick. Scott and I, we were doing a half-day event in Nashville, right? It was in Nashville. So I try to go there every as much as I can. We have to go in and do a Wednesday event, so Scott will take me to the Tuesday night Opry there. But so in the middle of the seminar, somebody just yells out, "He's dead!" I thought they were talking about the person next to him. I like thought somebody died, like right in the middle of the seminar. And Scott was running over there. He was going to lay on top of him and see if we could bring him back to life. And I thought, well, you know, signs and wonders. Who knows? Maybe. Anyway, I was telling a story about Ziglar. And I guess somebody had just seen, like, on their phone, which violated one of my principles. I kicked him out. And after I got the story. But anyway, Zig Ziglar had passed away. I wrote about him on the blog. And you should read his books and all that. Great Christian guy. He dated his wife. In fact, last time I saw him in New York City was after a meeting. He was down in the village, and he and his wife were going out to eat that night and did a little date night in the village. Jean is her name. But so Ziglar, he was always known to like speak and then like head to the airport to try to get home, spend the night at home. And there were these occasions where he would get home at a reasonable hour. I mean, sometimes it would be 1 o'clock at night or, you know, midnight or whatever. But I asked him one time, I said, so, you know, are you not too wound up when you get home? I mean, how does this work? He says, sometimes I pull in to my neighborhood and I sit at the park down the street before I go inside and I listen to music for 15 minutes. I thought, no, wait a minute. You're speaking. You're like literally are just running from this to the airport to make, and then you, if you get home like at 6 o'clock in the afternoon and you're about to go into your house, you sit down the street for like 30 minutes and listen to music. And I'm like, what do you mean? He said, I call it the decompression chamber. And he said, whenever you're changing gears between work and home or home and work, you should put yourself through a forced decompression chamber. Isn't that a great principle? I think of it as domains. I have different domains in my life. One domain is church. One domain is this ministry. One domain is as a writer. One domain is as a son to my parents. One domain is as a father to my son. One domain is as a spouse to Kelly. So whenever I'm shifting between those domains, I need a little decompression chamber. Depending on how intense the experience of the previous domain was, will determine how long the decompression chamber needs to be. So on the way home from work, for example, I try not to do a lot of stuff on the BlackBerry, or I try not to listen to a lot of good-for-you material. I don't listen to a lot of, like, teaching tapes or, you know, old Gary McIntosh DVDs on the way home. Sorry, Gary. You know, I don't try to do any of that on the way home. Now, going to work, I will. In the morning, going to work, man. I don't ever listen to talk radio. I don't ever listen. I listen to, you know, books on tape. I listen to good stuff on the way. But going home, it's all music. Because music helps me make the transition into the domain. And I'm going from the work domain into the home domain. You know, you land after a big speaking engagement. You get in your car. You want to run home. And then you get there and, like, you know, everybody's mad at you because you're the grouchy and the grump and all this kind of stuff. No, it's because you didn't shift domain properly. So you got to learn to shift between these domains. And so your date night's like that, too. If your date night's going to start at 6, don't work until 5:55. Everybody with me? You work until, say, 5:05, and then you use that 15 minutes to take a shower and smell nice and listen to a little music, and then, you know, you've shifted into the domain as part of that. So I just wanted to mention that decompression chamber and scheduling that into your calendar. And if you want, we can even say a word about margin and having margin in your calendar, which is not scheduling yourself so tight. Okay. Probably got about 30 more minutes to finish up this talk. And then that'll save us some time for application. Number one in your calendar was Sabbath. Number two? Worship. Number three? Rest. Number four? Eight. Number five? Growth. 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 You got to schedule time to grow. I'm talking about your personal growth time. Now, this is a little different than if you have my resource on developing a one-year personal growth plan. I think that's in your Renegade Pastors Hub. And I think if you go to the Outstanding Resources, everybody been in their hub at the Renegade Pastors Network? Yeah, it's if not, you go to renegadepastors.com. You log in with the email that we email you the reminders at. That's your main email. We can change that if you need to, but that's the email you should log in with. And then if you don't know your password, just put in your email address and click Forgot Password, and it'll email you the password of that address, and then you can change it once you get in if you need to. But inside there, you have a directory, which is like my Rolodex of all the different relationships people. I mean, Liberty Press is in there. CCB is in there. I just put Gary's cell phone in there so you can call him anytime, day or night. He's standing by, ready to go. So just it's right below Rick Warren. So it's Rick Warren and then Gary McIntosh right there, his personal cell phone numbers. And all that's in there. That directory is there. And then there's like the bonus resources, and then you have the monthly resources with your monthly tabs. Well, in the bonus resources, you should find the one-year personal growth plan. And it's how to put together a one-year personal growth plan. It's basically the preaching calendar idea applied to personal growth, but that's a little different because it incorporates a number of the ideas I've talked about here. In fact, this talk that I've done for the last 2.5 hours now could be an expansion of that little 90-minute talk. But if you want to use that talk with your staff or something like that, it's a pretty good overview. In there, I give you a growth plan, but this is a little bit different. But when you think about scheduling time for your own personal growth, you should understand that growth doesn't happen by accident. You don't just naturally grow. You know, just because you've been in ministry 20 years, like I've been, or actually I'm going on my 22nd year, let's see, this is 2013, it's been my 23rd year, going to my 23rd year in ministry, I could just have 1 year of experience, even though I've been in ministry 23 years. Because it could be that I have 1 year of experience, I've just repeated it 23 times over the last number of times. We've all known people like that. I knew a guy who switched churches every 18 months because he only had 18 months of sermons. And it was just easier to find a new church than find new sermons. And so, you just kind of do that. So we've all seen that. And we sometimes talk about wisdom and maturity and age and all that. No, sometimes you just get old. Sometimes you get old without getting the wisdom. Sometimes age comes alone. So you have to be intentional about your personal growth. And you have to invest in your personal growth. You have to plant seeds of personal growth every single day, week, month, and year of your life. Good ideas rarely sneak up on you. Jesus said if you want to find them, you have to ask, you have to seek, and you have to knock. And I'm preaching to the choir here because you all came. I mean, you came to the conference. I mean, this opening part of the talk should be better for those who didn't come to the talk, to the conference. But, you know, you came, and so you have a bent toward growth, or you have what Carol Dweck calls an open system, which means you're open to learning. You're continuing to seek new learning. And the opposite of that, of course, is a closed system, which means you think you know it all. It's the things you learn after you thought you know it all that really matters. It's the books you read after you get out of seminary that really make a difference. So you have to have this time of growth in your calendar. Now, what's interesting about the time of growth is a little bit every day can reap some tremendous rewards. We talk about this in the first session of coaching, and those of you that are in the new coaching network, I've already put it in the lecture notes for our February 28th meeting. That you plant little seeds, and from those little seeds come a lot of fruit. And the fruit is disproportional to the number of seeds. You can plant one seed and get a bunch of fruit. You know, so it's little investments. So let's just get into it. What are you going to do every day to grow? Just as you schedule in that daily worship time, is it possible to also schedule in some daily growth time? Now, these two can go hand in hand. Let's say you want to read a 200-page book every year. By the way, how many of you would be interested in a one-day event on how to write a 200-page book? Anybody interested in that? We were talking about this. I don't know if it was in this group or not, but Gary's written 21 books. I've read 21 books, and I've written 11 along the way. 10 are in print. I just signed a new contract, by the way. The next book, did I tell you this? Yeah, it's going to be called The Renegade Pastor, and it'll be an intro to this network. And then I've got two or three more sitting around out there, too. I got a book that the publishers won't publish. It's called Tongue Pierced. And they won't publish that because of the tongue. They don't like that idea too well. It's about the power of your words, but it's got a 30-day cursing challenge, and you know, not to curse for 30 days. I bet that's the reason why they don't like it. Yeah. Scott, will you check that? It's supposed to be curse-free for 30 days or whatever. So anyway, that's a point. We were talking about maybe doing a half day or something one time about writing your first book and maybe do something on that. But let's say you want to read a 200-page book. If you divide that up over just business days in the course of a month, that's 10 pages a day. So you schedule your daily devotional time, and then you add 20 minutes to it. So let's say you can read one page in 2 minutes' time. Okay, so it takes you 2 minutes to read one page. You have 20 minutes, you can read 10 pages. So you could literally read a 200-page book in a month. Just doing it this. There are books that I say require a lot of time, and then there are books that I say I can read just by putting them on the back of the toilet. You know? I mean, you can read that in 5-minute segments, and you'll be just fine. And you'll be able to cover it. In fact, you can read a book every quarter, just put it on the back of your toilet. I mean, that's just the facts. My books, for example, you could read those just a little bit at a time, as it might be. But you schedule this in. A lot of directions I could go here. And how many of you have been on the How to Read More webinar with me? Okay, good. Yeah, I'm going to turn that into a resource so you don't have to wait for the webinar. Every time there's been like a recording problem. So like I do it and something goes bad, or I get off on a tangent like I do sometimes and I don't like it. But I'm just going to go into the studio one day and do it so we have it as a 3-hour resource. But I read a book a day, basically. I'm a little off track. Last year, I got all slack, only read a couple hundred, but I think I finished around 227 last year, but who's counting? I had some other stuff I was doing, wrote 2 books, started the Renegade Pastors Network, stuff like that. But anyway, I read 1 hour every day. I read an hour a day. I can read a book in an hour a day. So a 240, 250-page book, not a massive book, but if you read bigger books, give yourself 2 days, okay? Take them on your vacation with you or whatever. But what would that look like if you read an hour a day? Say, okay, I can't do that. How about a half hour? Could you give me a half hour a day? How about 15 minutes? Could I just get 15 minutes a day? Could you read 15 minutes a day? You work your muscles. You can go from falling asleep reading 5 pages to being able to read a page in a minute. So, one page, 1 minute, that's a pretty good place to get to. So now you're reading 15 minutes a day. You read 15 pages. Now you're finishing a 200-page book in about half a month, approximately, a little longer time, maybe on Sunday. But you schedule that in. You say, well, okay, it might be a little hard to do. How about this? Stop listening to talk radio and listen to books on tape. I'm kind of fanatical about it. I don't expect you to be. I'm kind of weird about stuff. I'm neurotic. If Kimberly was here, she could tell you. She takes all of the books on tape that I buy, and she speeds them up to 133%. And so I listen to everything at 133%. In fact, I can't even listen to a sermon at regular rate anymore because it seems so slow. And so if you think I talk fast sometimes, it's because I'm used to listening to stuff at 133%. Now, the key, by the way, on 133% is you can't just speed it up. You also got to lower the treble. Because if you speed it up, it sounds like this. So then you lower the treble and it sounds normal. Now, some people sound normal at 133% because they talk so slow, so she speeds them up to like 150%. But now you're listening to a 30-minute sermon or a 30-minute talk in 22 minutes. It's like TV without the commercials, And then if they talk really slow, you listen to a 30-minute sermon in 15 minutes. And you got to find your comfort level, but I find the comfort level. Well, you spend 15 minutes in the car every day, you can listen to a 30-minute sermon. You spend 30 minutes in the car every day, you can listen to a 30-minute sermon, and you can listen to the first 30 minutes of Good to Great. Do that over the course of the week, you finished a bunch of sermons, and you finished Good to Great. And then if you're in the car longer than that, you can just listen to it again, listen to it again, listen to it again. I listen to books on tape every day when I shave and shower. It doesn't take me a lot of time. Shave and shower, what is that? 15 minutes, maybe if I'm like, a little slow, or if I've got to put a tie on, it takes me like an hour to remember how to tie it, then maybe it's a little bit longer or something like that. But that's 15, 20 minutes. It's amazing what you can go through. In fact, just this week, I realized in my downtime, just since I got here on Sunday night, I listened to the equivalent of 6 hours of audio. Just when my hands were busy, but my mind was free. You know, maybe doing a little ironing. I mean, contrary to how I dress, I actually do iron my stuff, you know. Doing little things that I have to do because you're on, you know, you're living out of a suitcase. There, so you just put it on to play. Now, did I get 6 hours of learning? I'm not going to get 6 hours of credit at Biola because I was busy. Okay, so I'm not ready to take a test on that, but I picked up something. You know, something went in, something stayed. I gathered a few things from just a little bit a day. So start with 15 minutes. Then take your lunch break once a week and eat at your desk and read. You know, don't surf the sports. I had a guy on my staff one time who said, I can't read. He finished number one in his fantasy football league, but he can't read, you know. I'm like, well, if you just spend the time you do on your fantasy football and use that in reading time, quit reading the Drudge Report and start reading something worthwhile. I found out, you know, other than the 15 minutes I spent on the newspaper, if anything else happens, somebody will tell me, you know. I mean, you know, some political leader gets shot somewhere. Somebody tells me, hey, did you hear what happened in Israel? I'm like, no, I didn't. Matter of fact, I was busy reading a book. No, okay, you know, tell me about it, you know. But 15 minutes a day, I'll give myself 15 minutes a day to read the paper. But I've got a pretty advanced system, so every day. Okay, and then, you know, what about weekly growth? Could you use that Sabbath to do a little extra reading? Once a week, could you have an appointment to read? I can't meet with you on 3 o'clock on Friday. I'm booked. Got an hour on my schedule to read, to study, to listen, to take a class online. This point is brought to you by Liberty University online, so I should get a commission for that. But, you know, what could you do once a week to have an appointment? An appointment. To say, no, that's study time. That's reading time. Not for sermon prep, but something you need to study. You say, well, I don't know what it should be. What problem do you have in your life right now? People have written books about that. You got a time management problem? 1 hour a week, read a book on time management. You got a staffing problem? 1 hour a week, read a book on staffing. Have an appointment with that. Say, I'm going to put it on my calendar, and I've got that appointment. Not with those, what did Gary call them here earlier, those very draining people. Cancel that appointment and put an appointment to study once a week on your calendar. Then how about monthly? Spend some time with somebody monthly who's figured some things out that you need to figure out. I used to call it measure monthly. Find somebody once a month who can help you measure, who can help you better sharpen your saw, who can help you better grow. That's why we do the coaching networks monthly. I tried to do them weekly. It was just too much. People didn't want to read a book every week, you know, so we do them monthly. Over the course of a year, I can teach you the 8 systems of a church and how to implement those in your church. So what, I don't know if I have the time. The year's going to pass anyway. All right? I mean, 1 year from now, we're all going to be a year older. What if a year from now, you had 10% of the assimilation system implemented in your church? What if you were able to keep one more first-time guest a week than you're keeping right now by taking that monthly investment of being in the coaching network? You say, well, what's the coaching network involve? Well, in my network, it involves about an hour and a half on the web. It involves a Q&A that sometimes takes about another 30 minutes, and then it's one book a month and a resource a month. You say, I don't think I'll be able to do all that. How about if you just do 10% of it? Get 10% of the results. You know, that's 10% more than you're getting now. Guy says, well, you gave 7 tips on assimilation. I can only do 2 of them. Great, you're ahead of the curve. Okay? You take those 2 and do those 2. Early results will get you so excited, a year from now, you'll go back and pick up the other 4. So you got to have that plan. You know, I used to say you should try to have lunch with somebody once a month. That's a pretty good thing to do. A lot of pastors around who are a little further along than you are, they'll have lunch with you once a month. They may not have the gift to coach you. You know, a lot of pastors I spend time with, they know how to do it. They just don't know how to tell you how to do it. And some of them have really big churches, but they don't know how to tell you how to do it. That you can watch them and you can learn from observing, but they can't necessarily articulate it. They can't put it into a system. But once a month, you need to have some kind of serious investment in your growth. I mean, some of you, and I heard you say it, you know, this is my 2nd coaching network with you. It's my 3rd coaching network. Just had somebody come back to advanced coaching for the 3rd time. I mean, why would you fly across the country, you know, for the 3rd time? Why would you invest $600 a month in advanced coaching for the 3rd time? Here's why. Because he told me, I only grow when I'm in coaching. I only grow when I'm in coaching. You know, you just keep doing it. You keep doing it. It's like the tapes you go back to. Do we have tapes anymore? It's like the messages you go back to. It's like the teachings you go back to. It's like the books that you go back to over and over and over. You need to have that investment. And say, well, what about you, Nelson? You do all this coaching. Yeah, I'm in a coaching network. 2009, when I got ready to pursue this new initiative of moving 1,500 miles away from our original campus, I got involved in a coaching network. Let me tell you how much I paid for that. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Because the return on that has been incredible. I'll tell you how much I paid. I paid $22,000 to be in that coaching network. But we started a new campus that 2 weeks ago celebrated the second anniversary in South Florida. On that Sunday, had 407 people in attendance. What was that $22,000 worth? It didn't cost me anything. We grew a church out of the midst of that. I was with somebody who's the only person in America that I know that's launched multi-sites where the multi-sites are bigger than 20% of the main site. I'll give you a chance to think about that. The dirty little secret in multi-site, by the way, is that rarely are the other sites 20% bigger than the original site. This is why I tell you don't do multi-site until you got at least one church of 1,000. Because all you're going to do is start all these other little baby churches. So there's one guy I know of in America who's got a main campus running 10,000, and he's got multi-sites running 2,000, 3,000, and 4,000. Most people don't. But I said, how much is it for me to be a part of your coaching network? He said, $2,000 a month. I said, is it a year? Is it a year-long thing? He's like, no, I do 11 months. I don't know why I did 11 months, but I was glad to sign up for it. I'm in one right now that is for business folks. It's people who've got ministries like we have here at Church Leader Insights, a different kind of coaching network. But I'm in the room with people who have, just for rough terms, multi-million dollar ministries that are doing things like we're doing, and they're doing stuff around the world, and they're doing stuff internationally. Not so much for the church side, but for this, because I knew that if this, what we're doing here at Church Leader Insights, was going to go to the next level, I had to grow as part of that. And I have to fly to the middle of nowhere for that network. I mean, literally, like, I can't get a direct flight there. So, like, I mean, I love to get there. I hate going because it's just in the middle of nowhere. But that just happens to be where this guy does it. And there's a specific reason that they are there. But people with organizations our size, like at Church Leader Insights, we come together with these other folks, and I learn from them. And, you know, like the monthly packets you get, the monthly Renegade packets, I never thought about that. You know, another ministry here in Florida was doing that. I'm like, well, let me see that. I said, you mean you still mail? They're like, yeah, because people want to get it in the mail. And it's not just enough to do it online. If they do it online, only half the people will use it. But if you send it to them in a mail, I'm like, well, who does that for you? Where do you get that? What's your publishing schedule for that? You know, how that works? So we begin to see that. The coaching hub that you logged into, we learned that in the coaching network. You know, how to do these interviews like I do with these authors, we learned that in the coaching network. You know, whatever it is, there's somebody who's further along that can help you figure it out. And by the way, the guy I learned some of this stuff from, his ministry is not as big as Church Leader Insights. He works with a very small group of church leaders, actually kind of nonprofit executives, really. But he works with a very small group. But he had figured something out, because here's what I've learned. You can learn from somebody who's further along than you are, or they just figured out some stuff. So just because somebody's church is smaller than yours doesn't mean you can't learn from them. Just because somebody's church is bigger than yours doesn't mean you can. So it's about this network. And then some people are just really gifted. My gifts are limited. You know, I'm not going to be the person that helps you figure out student ministry. It's just, you know, it's not my thing. I'm not going to be the one that talks about your sex life. It's just not my thing, you know. But if you want to know how to grow a church, if you want to know how to build healthy systems, then I'm your person. You know, if you want to be around somebody who loves pastors that can help you structure your life so that you can fulfill your calling, I'm your person. You know, you've got some deep psychological needs. I know somebody I can recommend, you know. I mean, you know, you need to get your taxes done, go see Clergy Advantage. You know, you need to put the computer program behind the system, go see Church Community Builder. I mean, I don't know how to do any of that. But, you know, you've got to put yourself in that kind of position. And I think monthly is a good time. Now, this one network I'm in, we meet 2 days every other month, and I took that idea and applied it to advanced coaching. Like, you know, if you're going to fly somewhere, why not do 2 meetings instead of one? So advanced coaching, we don't meet monthly. We meet every other month, but then we do 2 meetings back to back. And boy, I'm wore out. You know, by the time Tuesday comes or, you know, the second day comes, I'm wore out. But then I've got 2 months to implement. So I only have to go to this godforsaken place for this coaching network every other month as part of it. And I signed up again. We got so much out of it last year. Scott and I are doing it again. He's putting me on a plane to nowhere again, you know. But we go, and I drag myself down to those meetings, and I sit there, and I listen, and I learn monthly. And then to go to the intermittent idea, but yearly, there's a time for that. This is what I would say is like the yearly conference that you go to. I've benefited over the years from going to like annual, maybe once a year, going to like a Ken Blanchard training. Back when the Leadership Summit used to be all about leadership, many, many years ago when they actually talked about leadership. It's like the big church planning conference they do here in town. I remember when they actually used to teach church planning at that thing. Like, that's how old I am. They hadn't taught church planning at that event in years. Still call it the largest gathering of church planners in the world. Like, trying to find a church planning thing at that. I'm a little on the church planning bent, because tomorrow I'm teaching a church planning conference. I'd appreciate your prayers for that. As far as I can tell, I'm the only conference that actually still teaches somebody how to start a church. Everybody else will bring in the cool authors, and they'll bring in the cool speakers, but nobody will tell you how to start a church. Go to large church planning conference, nobody talks about church planning. I don't understand that, you know. You can go to somebody with a website that has church planning in its name, and nobody will talk to you about church planning, you know. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me. As it is, you go to a church leadership conference, they don't talk about church leadership, they talk about social justice. Like, well, you know, that's important. I'm glad that person is taking, you know, those old tarps and turning them into shoes for kids in Africa, but I'd really like to know how to lead my church right here, okay? I mean, I don't know, you know. You come to the Renegade Pastors Conference, we're going to talk about Renegade Pastors, okay? We'll talk about that kind of stuff here. But every once in a while, you need to find that. And unfortunately, I'm having to go outside my own circle of competence to find it. I'm having to go to the business people to find it. I'm having to go to the nonprofit world to find some of this leadership. But it costs more out there. You know, to go to a Pat Lencioni event, that costs you more money than to, you know, to go to a Saddleback event or something like that. But sometimes it's worth it. You can't do it all, but you can do it. And then sometimes you can't go, but you can buy the resources on MP3. I almost said CD, but you can buy them on CD or you can download them and get stuff there. The point is, you have a plan. A plan for personal growth. Now, you've got these five elements in your calendar. On paper, you look at your list, five elements looks like a lot. One day a week for the Sabbath, 3 or 4 hours on a Wednesday night for your date night, 15 minutes a day for personal growth, an hour a week for reading, a day a month for the coaching network. But I added all that up. And the best I can add up, that still gives you close to 200 work days throughout the year. Okay, that's still a lot of time. That's still a lot of time to do ministry. And I was pretty generous in adding all that up. Most of us right now, let me not say it that way, most pastors right now who have not heard this lecture, who've not heard these five pillars, they're not working 200 days anyway. So the average pastor is not doing this, nor are they working the 200 days that you have left over from this. So I guess if we could just raise the water level and work the 200 days, that would be an improvement. But if you work the 200 days in between these five pillars, then you're a renegade pastor. And your life is healthy, you're growing, you're fulfilling your calling, and you're saying no to average. If that makes sense, say, I got it. Got it. Got it? Good. All right, so that's my talk on the five pillars. Any questions about any of those five? I've got 4 or 5 words on my list, from automate to systems to 90-minute blocks to off-peak to reminders to don't start the day till you finish the day to that. Any of that of interest to you?
Reminders?
Yeah, reminders. A little thing in your calendar to do is... if you've got something coming up that you need to remember, don't wait till it pops up to remind you. Okay, like in my calendar, for example, it gives me a 15-minute warning. So, I've got my sermon run through this afternoon at 4:30. So that gives me plenty of time to finish up here with you, take a few photographs, sign some books or whatever. And then at 4:15, it'll pop up that I need to get to the sermon run through. Okay, I didn't forget the sermon run through. I knew I had a sermon run through. I'm prepared for the sermon run through. I already went up there before lunch and got the room set up for the sermon run through, so I'm okay. But if this was Kelly's birthday, I would have put a reminder last week in the calendar. 1 week to Kelly's birthday. And then if I didn't have everything ready for her birthday 1 week out, I would have reset that to be 5 days before. And if I still didn't have everything ready, I would have set that to be 3 days before, because I don't want to just find out in the moment that I've got to do something that's going to take me longer than in the moment to prepare. You see what I'm saying with that? How many of you have missed a birthday because of that? You remember that morning, but it's too late to send the card. So we go online, we send the e-card, you know. Oh, I hope they didn't mind. We're going to paste something on their Facebook. Hey, that's okay, but if it's your son or if it's your daughter, you know, or if it's your best friend, you might want to do a little better than that. If it's your wife or your spouse, you got to do a little better than that. So whenever you put something on your calendar, think through the reminder schedule of that. In Church Leader Insights language, Scott calls this intensification. So, you know, if you notice what we did with this event, there's a 1 week out reminder. You know, there was a 1 month out reminder. When the hotel was almost done with the rooms, we sent you a reminder. So we wanted to intensify. Now, that wasn't a big deal for this event because you paid to be here. But some of our free events, there's a 4 or 5 step intensification process because we really want you to be at the event. So that's what I'm talking about. And you have to kind of think, is this 1 day before? You know, is it 1 week before? Is it 1 month before? Whatever those reminders might be. And your Sabbath will help you with that, that proflection. When you look out over the upcoming week, now, if your Sabbath is on Friday and you've got a birthday on Sunday, it may be too late to get the present. You know, so you don't want to just rely on that. But that helps you, and I found that to be really, really helpful in my own scheduling. Make sense? All right. Any of these others? You know what a system is, by the way, right? Yeah, go ahead.
A question about Sabbath.
Yeah. Great question. The question is about sabbaticals. And Gary, if you want to jump in on this, Steve Reynolds, if you're back there, yes, if you want to jump in and say anything about sabbaticals. Sabbaticals can be very, very good. There is a time to do something that's like a study break. I don't really call that a sabbatical. But, you know, if the church gives you a week for like a study break and it allows you to get ahead on some of your sermon planning and some of that, I think all that's good. We asked this question of H.B. London on the Renegade Pastors call the other day. It's in your hub if you missed it. He gave some great advice. He said, the only time you can take a sabbatical is if the church is healthy. That's pretty good. It's a pretty good start, you know, of if the church is healthy. And then there is some stuff out there, like I don't know if it's Craig Rochelle or somebody like that wrote something on the Sabbath. We're trying to track that down. HB, back in the day, he said that when he was at Focus on the Family, he wrote something on how to take a sabbatical. So we're trying to build that out, is what I'm saying. I took my first sabbatical last year. I was supposed to take it 2 years ago, but that's when I made the move from New York to South Florida. So I kind of messed up my own sabbatical, probably because of the junk in my own heart, because I didn't want to take it. But, you know, there is something to that. So we're trying to build out some resources in that area. So I appreciate you prompting that reminder. Reynolds, McIntosh, anything you want to add on sabbaticals?
What I'm seeing around the country right now is that churches are giving pastors about 2 weeks a year towards a sabbatical, and then in like the sixth year, give maybe a 2 to 3 month sabbatical, but it has to be something that you're doing like for your personal growth.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. You're a gentleman and a scholar.
But then the churches typically ask you to commit to staying in the church when you get back for 2 years. So they give you the sabbatical, your vacation's on top of that. But they're afraid that you'll leave and come back and be done.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good word. Steve, you have anything on that? Yep, okay. We're trying to find some more resources on that. It is a little area that I have not, that I would like to explore, and it's something fairly new to me. You know, I was at the Journey 10 years, and they tried to give me one at 7, and I just couldn't get it worked out, so it, you know, it took a little while to kind of get that going. And there's a difference between a time off and a sabbatical that I think is there. And I'm a big fan of taking more and more time off versus the sabbatical, but we are looking for some resources. So appreciate that reminder. Thank you. I was going to say a word about systems, and I'll go to your note back there. My definition of systems, most of you are familiar with the 8 systems. But there's church systems and there's personal systems. And in the lingo, the the acrostic for systems is the same. It's anything that saves you stress, time, energy, money. S-Y-S-T-E-M. Anything that saves you stress, time, energy, money. So an assimilation system saves you stress, time, energy, and money because there's a consistent follow-up process with all of your first-time guests. A good stewardship system saves you stress, time, energy, and money because there's an active system that cultivates new givers, moves them to regular givers, moves them to tithers, moves them to extravagant givers, and on down the line. So there's all that. But then you can apply those same systems into your life and have different systems related to that. I was reminded here, did we pass these out, Scott? Okay, I need to pass these out. If you would like to be a part of my next Senior Pastor Telecoaching Network, this is your commitment sheet. And so you would just fill this out and you would give it here to Scott before you leave. So we're going to hand these out to you. And if you have any questions about that, I'll answer it here in a moment. But let's go to the back. What's that?
Finishing your day before you start.
Oh, yeah, finishing the day before you start the day. It's one of my favorite time management principles. In the time management resource that I have called Time Management for Busy Pastors, which is not to be confused with an earlier version I did called Time Management for Lazy Pastors, I intended to give you 31 time management tips, any one of which would save you an hour a month. And so I thought, well, I could give you another work week, you know, if I do 31. Well, then I got in there and I actually ended up having 34 because I can't count. It's like that list I gave in Activate. 10 ways to multiply your groups. It actually was 11. But, you know, I always try to deliver more than I promise. So there's 34 time management tips that relate to ministry life. And one of my favorite is, don't start the day till you finish the day. Don't start the month till you finish the month, and don't start the year till you finish the year. My brother, who's the medical doctor, he says that the difference between a successful person and a failure, and an unsuccessful person, I'll say it not so colloquial like him, the difference between a successful person and a not-so-successful person is that a successful person can tell you what they're going to be doing a year from now. And the point is that you don't just calendar haphazardly. You don't just calendar as it comes up on the fly, but you have an intentional plan. So I've tried to adopt that and said, okay, I'm not going to start Friday until I finish Friday on paper. So here's what I'm going to be doing at 8 o'clock. Here's what I'm going to be doing at noon. Here's what I'm going to be doing at 3 o'clock. Now, I was going to make this joke earlier, but the mood was so intense that I couldn't make it when Dr. McIntosh was talking about moral failures and things like that. And I'll have to preface this by saying I have a serious pull towards sin. I mean, I surprise myself sometimes with like how dark that can be in my mind and how like a magnet I can be pulled in that direction. I mean, I can be thinking such spiritual thoughts one moment and then like immediately go to this dark and nasty place. I mean, I'm totally surprised by that sometimes. But I did want to make the joke earlier that said, I can't have an affair tomorrow. I'm booked, you know? Like, I don't know when I would fit it in, okay? So I was part of a church planning team. We started a church in Vegas, and don't go Google this, okay? We started a church in Vegas, and the guy had a moral failure. And we found out, like, he'd been having a dual life. I mean, like, you know, he's married, he's got these little kids, but then, I mean, literally, like, in the cul-de-sac around the corner, he's living this other life. So we had to fly in, you know. Oh, Terry, man, it was horrible. Like, I mean, it was just so agonizing. And his brother found it out. And so we had to deal with this, you know. And it's been, like, this torturous weekend to try to deal with this. And the church is running, like, 600 It's not like a small church, too. And so I guess like the stress just got the best of us. And finally, just somebody said, how do you have the time for that? Like, how do you have the time to do that? Like, I'm thinking, I couldn't pull this off. Like, you know, I mean, you've got to have like some kind of energy that was like superb. I mean, I don't have the energy for that. I barely have the energy for one marriage, much less like two around the corner, you know. It's just like, I don't even know. So like the sin, I guess, is so dark and the drive is so strong. You know, you can pull that off. But, I mean, I don't travel alone. I don't even know that I have a minute in my day that somebody doesn't know what I'm doing. I mean, some of that willfully. Some of it, I'd like to have maybe a little more freedom than I have. But generally speaking, I welcome that kind of thing. And So, like, I can tell you what I'm going to be doing. You want to know what I'm going to be doing at this time tomorrow? It'll be 3:37 tomorrow. I'll be sitting right here in this chair, and I'll be trying to land a church planning conference. You want to know what I'm going to be doing at 3:37 on Saturday? I'm going to be in the car listening to this thing called the A to Z Boot Camp on the way drive back to Boca. For the previous 2 hours before that, from 1 to 3, I'm going to be on the phone with New York during my annual Saturday call with the staff who work on Saturday. I mean, I could just tell you. So I'm not going to start the day until I finish the day. Now, do I have any fun in the day? Of course I do. You heard my calendar, right? I mean, yes, I've got fun in the day. Tomorrow night, during my Sabbath, we've already set up. We're going to see this new movie with The Rock. You know, those that are staying over, we're going to do that, you know. We're going to go eat somewhere kind of fun over at Downtown Disney tomorrow night. I mean, it's not that you know, you want to know where I'm going to be next week. I'm going to be in Nashville with my wife. She's got something, I've got something. I'm going to carry her bag one day. She's going to stand in the back and smile at me while I teach the next day. I mean, you know, we're going to go to the Grand Ole Opry on Saturday. I mean, so, you know, it's just like you kind of know. So you don't start the week till you finish the week. When's your week start? Does it start on Sunday morning? Start on Monday morning? What's that schedule going to be like for you? And then don't start the year till you finish the year. We teach the preaching calendar. I mean, you know, the preaching calendar drives a lot. So to show up for the preaching calendar meeting, I have to show up with my vacation dates because I got to know when I'm going to be gone. I mean, we're not going to have a big day on a day I'm going to be gone. Not that I would do that because I know where the big days are going to be. But you put it, and it's not perfect. It's not like every hour of my day scheduled or every hour of my week scheduled or every day of my year scheduled. There's plenty of freedom in there. I call them expansion joints. There's plenty of expansion joints in my calendar. And then there's margin. Richard Swenson wrote a book that if he ever dies, I'm going to rewrite it right after I rewrite the Lyle Schaller stuff. I'd just like to go on record, Gary, that if Schaller dies, I'm rewriting all of his stuff. Yeah, and we can co-author some of it because, you know, I've been beating this drum. I mean, I'm a huge Schaller fan, and now I got to go and dig out my old parish papers after you mentioned that at lunch and find all that stuff. But Schaller can sometimes say more in like 3 pages than I'd say in a whole book. And I've got a copy of like 2 pages worth of text where he didn't even use a period. Just had like a run-on sentence for like 2 pages. Just kept going as part of that. So anyway, but Richard Swenson wrote a book a number of years ago called Margin. The problem is he made it hard to understand. Margin just simply means you don't schedule yourself so tight. So it's kind of the decompression zone thing, but you apply it to like even meetings at the office. Don't ever schedule an hour meeting. Put that down. I said it. Don't ever schedule an hour meeting. Schedule a 50-minute meeting. And then use the 10 minutes in between as margin. Better yet, schedule a 45-minute meeting. Better yet, schedule a 27-minute meeting and just see if you can get it done. And then if you schedule a 27-minute meeting, don't schedule your next one at minute 29. Give yourself some breathing room in there. Go eat an apple. Go take a walk around the block. Go get a library card, Tommy. How much are they out here? Okay? So, you know, sometimes I do stuff to entertain my staff. All right, so, you know, don't schedule everything so tight. If your spouse calls you at 5 o'clock in the afternoon and says, I'm going to put dinner on, what time do you want me to start? Don't give the minimum amount of time that you could possibly make at home. So like you're sitting there at 5 o'clock thinking, okay, I got to get this done, I got to get that done. If everything goes as planned, I can be home by 5:30. Resist with everything in your body to say 5:30. Because if you walk in at 5:31, you are a zero. But if you say 5:45 and you get home at 5:44, you are a hero because you built margin in your life. Don't schedule your meetings across town so that you have to make every red light to get there. You know, don't leave home with just enough time to make it. You know, I get some reading in because I arrived at meetings early. I got here to this meeting. I didn't stay in this hotel because somebody lets me use a condo nearby. And so I got here every morning early, and I was able to sit out in the car and read the USA Today and look over my notes and be able to walk in ready to go. Margin, building that into your schedule. And what that does the same thing all this other stuff does. It forces you to be more effective in the time that you have. Okay, start the day, finish the day, start the year, finish. Real quick about the seasons, since I just got to cover it. Would you rather talk about seasons or automation?
Seasons.
Okay. There are ministry seasons. There are God seasons, spring, summer, fall. And then there are personal seasons. And you really need to understand the seasons. You know, the men of Issachar, they were able to understand the times and read the days. So you have to kind of understand the seasons. I just gave a talk on this to our married staff on the journey. We realized that we have to do more to help the staff that are married understand what's going on in the church and what's going on in ministry. So I do, like, as part of the top 10% in some ways, I do these gatherings. Sometimes we just go out and have fun together, like we go to the Journey concert or whatever I was telling you about. Other times I do talk. So I did a talk the other day, if you're interested, I suppose we could put it in your hub, where I talked about what happens when the seasons of ministry and the seasons of marriage collide. Okay? So you got to kind of understand where you are in this. You know, when a new couple gets married, I mean, they're in springtime. You know, the seasons of marriage is springtime. Now, that's really good if the season of ministry is springtime as well. But if the season of ministry is winter and the season of marriage is springtime, that creates a conflict. And so just understanding where you are in these seasons. So you need more time to rest when you're in a season of winter. God naturally wired it up that way. It gets darker earlier, okay? In God's season, it gets darker earlier in the winter. If you're in a season of winter, you might need to rest a little bit more. If you're in the season of spring, you got a long day, you might need to work a little bit more. You know, the period right now in my ministry leading up to Easter is a season of spring. Now, part of the reason I've got this little time off next week is because I finished the big day in February, but I'm not quite into the season of Easter yet, so I just planned a couple of days off next week. I got a speaking engagement one day. Kelly happened to have something that she wanted to do one day, and then we've got a couple extra days of vacation. And that will give me this rest and momentum I need to go into this crazy period that's going to lead up to Easter. You know, and so from March the 5th all the way to March 31st, really in my season, it's going to go up to about mid-April because of some other things that we've got going on and different speaking engagements I have. But I look at that. I say, okay, this is the season. And I've got to communicate constantly to the people that I care about what season of ministry I'm in and what season we're in. I didn't say this, but one of the things Kelly and I do on our date night, and I had a couple one night at dinner chide me for this, and I just thought, well, they just didn't know, and they probably are divorced now and don't even like each other anymore. But they chided us because we had our calendars out at dinner on date night. Because in New York, like, people who sit beside you, they think they can just talk to you because the tables are really close. And I'm like, well, I don't even know you. Who are you? You know, what do I care? You might have been divorced five times. So, then that's when Rick Warren said to me, no, it's me. It's me and Kay. No, I'm just kidding. Little inside joke. I should have. If I'd been in New York, I would have used, like, Brooklyn Tab, but anyway, it's neither here nor there. But I mean, on our date night, we sit down and look at our calendar. And I mean, she's got my calendar, she has access to my calendar and knows that, but it's just good to go over it one more time. You know, see if I've changed anything, see what we've got lined up. Look at that next day. It doesn't take long, 15 minutes. Sometimes we get to the restaurant early before our reservation, we just go over in the car. But then if I know that I'm about to go into a particularly busy season, I let her know. Hey, this is going to be a really busy season that I've got. And she's like, I know. Every time around Easter is a busy season. But hearing me say it somehow softens it. And then sometimes things change. You know, in New York, when I pastored up there, the season around Christmas time was the easiest time of my year. Because in Manhattan, we don't even do Christmas Eve services. Everybody leaves the city. But now I'm down here and I'm pastoring this church in the suburbs. And it's this wealthy suburban area where everybody comes home. Oh, good Lord, I was wore out come Christmas Day this year. Because we had all kinds of stuff going on leading up to Christmas Eve. So at the end of that, Kelly and I were like, well, this is really different. You know, it's like we had to adjust everything in our calendar. And so we said, okay, you know what? We're not going to be able to go see the grandparents. We're going to have to fly the grandparents to us, you know, next year. And some of that. So, you know, you just have to have this constant conversation and awareness and alertness about what season you're in. Also, if you find yourself going into a season of winter and you don't have that rest on your calendar, you may have to just change something. You know, doctors, they just go in and say, cancel all my appointments. You know, you may have to do that every once in a while. Best thing you can do is take an early afternoon off. You know, best thing you do, add a day off in. So you kind of get to know about the seasons. Make sense? I mean, I could flesh it out a little bit more, but for the general sake is awareness, conversation, adjustment to the seasons. If I could get an A in the middle, I'd have awareness, conversation, and adjustment to the seasons is kind of what you have to be. The other thing you can do to learn to save up a lot of time, I just got to cover it because I'm neurotic, and I've got to check everything off my list here, is automate. Automate as much stuff in your calendar as you can. Automate your reminders. Don't spend time on stuff you can automate. I rarely ever go to a restaurant without a reservation, just because I don't have to wait. You know, we do call ahead seating. You know, they do that at the Applebee's, you know, at our place. I mean, you know, it's not that I go to nice restaurants. It's just I call and get the reservation. I automate. I don't want to have to show up and wait. You automate that. I don't ever go to a drugstore anymore. I just automate it. I mean, Amazon Subscribe and Save, they'll send me 3 tubes of toothpaste every 4 months. I mean, I figured it out. That's about how much I go through over the 4 months, and I'll leave one in a hotel somewhere, and they'll send me another pack. I mean, it's just automated. I don't pay any bills. Bill night at our house used to be stressful. Now I just don't pay them at all. I just move every 30 days. They can't find me. No, I don't do that. It's automate those things. You know, I mean, you can automate your power bill. You can automate your internet bill. I mean, what else do you have? I got a cell phone. I have a lot of stuff. Just automate that. I mean, I'm out of debt. You know, I live frugally. I can just automate. I used to sit down at my house on that bill night. Kelly would read the bills. I'd write the checks. Kelly would read the bills. I'd write the checks. By the time we were done writing 4 or 5 checks, stress level was through the roof. You know, the 2-minute kiss was, I don't even want to talk to you. And so, it's got to be a better way than this. So, you know, I get my salary on the 1st and on the 15th. So I have certain bills go through on the 5th. I have other certain bills go through on the 20th. And it's just automated. So now it takes me 5 minutes. You know, I log on, look at the account, make sure everything cleared just fine, and I'm good to go as part of that. I automate the date night. We don't finish the date night before we put the next date night on the calendar. You know, it's just automated. I just can't mess it up. I have the Sabbaths already on there. I mean, I can't do anything about them now anyway. They're on my calendar. It's just automated. Other stuff I could say about automation, but you have to listen to the resource. And part of my automation is a little principle that I've got called living off peak, which means when everybody else is doing whatever it is you want to do, either do it before or after them. Don't do it with them. You know, everybody wants to go eat at the nice restaurants in your area at a certain time. Everybody wants to go see the dentist at the first appointment in the morning. Everybody wants to do whatever at the same time. Don't do it at that time. For everything you want to do, there is an off season. There is an off peak. Everybody wants to go on vacation on July 4th. Now, I happen to actually be going on vacation this year on July 4th, so, you know, it's not exactly, you can't always do that, but, you know, this year, you know, you can't always live off peak, but I'm just driving down the street to something that we're doing. It's not like a big deal, but, you know, everything has, it's busy, so, you know, I go in to get my teeth cleaned. I'm a big fan of that. They say dental care solves heart problems, all that stuff. I put it on the calendar, you know, put the 3 appointments or whatever they want me to have on the calendar, and I ask the little receptionist this. I say, nice lady. I say, hey, what time would give me the least wait time? You know, I'm doing the Lord's business. I can't just be sitting out here reading old magazines. I got stuff to do, you know? I said, you know, and she says, I ask her this way, what appointment has the least wait time? She says, the appointment coming back from lunch. I said, well, tell me about that. She's like, well, we always go to lunch late, but we always come back on time. Because, you know, the morning gets backed up, so it just eats into the lunchtime. So I take that first appointment right after lunch. You know, I can adjust to that. You know, so I go to the dentist at 1:30. I don't have a lot of freedom in my schedule, but I can go to the dentist at 1:30. You know, I can adjust to that. Kelly and I laughed that, you know, we didn't have to wait to get old to go eat at 6 o'clock. We just go eat at 6 o'clock, you know. Or you go to the movie first, and then you go to eat later. You just figure it out. And so you're not doing everything that everybody else does. If rush hour is at 8 o'clock, go to work at 7. I mean, you know, you can adjust this kind of thing. And you have some freedom in that. Of all the things that we don't have as pastors, we do have a little bit of freedom here and there to adjust that. I mean, nobody says you have to go to the post office at lunchtime. You know, you can adjust and go some other time. I don't even go to the bank anymore. I mean, you know, everything's automated. I mean, I can take a picture of the thing. It's automated anyway. It goes right in there. You know, somebody gives me $50 for doing a wedding. I don't handle that anyways. Give it to the accountant. They put it in the church fund. But, you know, that's different. You shouldn't do that. You should probably keep it. But, you know, whatever. You just automate it. But this off-peak thing. So we have a lot of fun collecting stories and coaching of pastors who live off-peak. And, you know, some of you were making jokes at me this week about living off-peak. Or I'm standing in line up there to get coffee and Jamie's nudging me. You're not living off-peak. So, you know, that's how Jamie talks, by the way. So, it's true, isn't it, Vic? You know, to sleep. Yeah, it's like, he's like grumpy from, you know. Anyway, you had a good couple days?